Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to The Gathering. I had to think which show this was. It is The Gathering on yes. Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and we're here with Tom and Melissa Gould, my co-hosts for The Gathering shows. This is the show where we address questions that you have. You can email them to us. You have before the show or call in. Frankly, we didn't get a lot of emails today, so we'd appreciate your calls. The number is 1-888-627-6008. Thank you, Tom, for that that reminder, and everybody can see that if you're watching the video. I wanted to start off by mentioning that we do have 10 spots open for each of the retreats that are coming up, January in Florida and April in Florida. The April one is for bereaved parents only. The January one is for people who've suffered all types of losses. So, you know, that will fill up pretty quickly. So 10 spots. So if you were thinking about going, they've been very helpful. If you're dealing with grief, I would suggest you make your reservation as soon as you can. And now we can get to some of the questions. I wrote down something for us to kick around. If I could read my own notes. Oh yeah. So we were talking about this once before, but I had a medium that we were evaluating, and when I laid out the ground rules, you know, I said that they are not allowed to ask the sitter who the sitter would like to speak with. And, you know, and the medium's response was, you know, okay, she'll abide by those rules, but she just came back from Arthur Findlay College, you know, in England, and there they changed their feeling about this, and now they allow the mediums to ask that. So there's two schools of thought. I mean, one, some of the mediums will say that if they know who you want to speak to, it like kickstarts the connection.
A little leading, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was always against it because you're feeding the medium, you know. So if I tell, who do you want to talk to? And I say, well, I want to talk to my son in spirit, you know, right away they've got a bunch of information. So I was curious what your feelings were about that.
Well, how does that meld with the telemetry where you hand them an article of clothing or a piece of jewelry, and basically you want to connect with the people who that belong to? I mean, that's kind of the same thing in a way, right?
Yeah, except that they still have to. That seems to be a bit more, a bit harder, you know, if you have an item that you're touching,
yeah,
opposed to giving them a name, and usually you're giving them the
relationship.
You know, I would like to talk to my, now if they just said,
I have your father.
I'd like to talk to Bob. You know, they don't know. Bob could be a dad, could be a son, could be, you know, that's a little bit different. But I think giving them the relationship, for me personally, I would prefer not, because I know I'd be questioning it, you know, because are they really feeding off of what I just told them? So I don't know. I don't know the answer to it, but I mean, we're going to be consistent and not allow it. But, I guess that, I've talked to some scientists in the past that said that they do allow, they, in some of their research, they give, the sitter, the medium some information about the sitter. So who
I'm
knows?
torn about it. I've always held Arthur Findlay College in very high regard, and of some of the mediums applying to our certification program said that they studied there. That held a lot of weight in my eyes.
Yeah, I
There's,
mean,
I'd like to hear their reasoning. Did they?
I'm going to look into it further.
Well, also, I've grappled with this as well because, yes, when we are testing mediums and doing a scientific double blind and all this, we don't give any information. And I always thought, well, not always thought, but I got to the point where I said, well, some of our mediums who I know are excellent, we're not testing them anymore. We're wanting to communicate. So what's the problem with going to a medium that you know is tried and true and say, hey, what can you do about hearing from my father? Something like that. I don't see a problem with that necessarily.
Yeah, and along those lines, we have always said, in our remarks to people that when we're explaining mediumship, that a medium cannot summon any spirit to appear. And then, but I've talked to some of our mediums, and like one in particular, and he said, "Sure, we can." I can ask, somebody, from spirit. Now, that's not the same as summoning. Sounds like you're ordering them to come through. They still have free will, but yeah, he can try to focus in on a particular spirit. So I don't know that there's no right or wrong. That just for our purposes, we try to be as scientific as we can, during these things.
I think that's a good way for us to handle it, at least for the certification process.
Here's a question that came in. What happened? I mean, we've talked about this, before, not necessarily exactly these things, but what happens with people who have lived a life, as evildoers, and dark energy, while on Earth, and after they pass? She wanted to know what happens to them after they pass, and she said, being raised in a religious practice of believing that there's hell and Satan and evil energies, I'm wanting to understand more. And she says, can they meaning the evil energies, I guess, get in the way of people receiving help from helpers, Why don't you guys think of that first?
While I'm busy sewing lovely hugs from heaven items, I'm listening to true crime podcasts, and I don't understand my draw to that, but it's I love them. And lately, I've been asking Tom, so often the person telling their story, and they're true, that somebody has just shown themselves to be evil. And I struggle with that. I was not raised with a religious background at all. So evil to me is just, people who do rotten things. And I'm always asking Tom, do you think evil can really exist? And, or could it just be a deformity in the brain? We don't know. Maybe they're just behaving this way because there's a brain disorder. However, the commonality with these stories, I would say in the past three stories that I've listened to, the person who was showing these evil tendencies, each person described them as their eyes had turned black. And I thought that was so interesting that the eye color would change. And I don't think my theory about a deformed brain would account for that. So I'm, you know, in answer to this person's, you know, question, from what we've heard from the mediums, even if somebody did lead that kind of life or behaved in those ways, after they've crossed over and they've had their life review and they've seen the harm they've done, we've never heard of someone who hasn't wanted forgiveness or to repent in some way. But clearly I'm stuck in the evil part right now and the dark eyes.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a concentrated place, as you will, you know, hell, you know, and demonic beings in the afterlife. I think, yeah, what we're dealing with is here on Earth, you have people who are sociopaths who know that what they're doing is wrong and do it anyway. But you have psychopaths who have no clue what right or wrong is. And then they just act on their basis instincts. And then, and another thing, if I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but there's a book that we often refer to called Testimony of Light that deals with this, that there are people who come out of the physical world having led a life of evil. And, they are greeted with love and compassion, but then they're sort of removed from the rest and they're worked on, so that they work on dealing with what they did in life. And then the next step is, if they don't repent or change in the afterlife, if their energy stays negative, then they're sent back again to relearn. I know the Hindu religion says you keep coming back until you reach nirvana, and I'm not sure if that's Hindu or Buddhist, but one of those religions says you keep coming back until your soul reaches that level that is filled with love and compassion.
And you know, Tom, that makes me think too, when, again, Testimony of Light, when they said they work on them, that to us sounds like, oh, that'll take time. But remember, time has no meaning on the other side. So by the time the loved one has their first reading with a medium and the medium's able to say, yes, they, you know, they saw the error of their ways and are, you know, now expressing their feelings of forgiveness and love towards you, that could happen incredibly fast.
Yeah, I agree with, you know, what you both said, especially that, you know, we think in terms of self-judgment versus as a divine entity that's telling you, you go here or you go there. You know, I understand that is in conflict with some religious beliefs, but what we've always talked about is we found it very curious that witnessing, you know, literally, you know, 1,000 readings, we've never seen evil come through in a reading, which I always found somewhat fascinating, you know, I'm always asking about it, because it's, you know, surely there are, you know, in this world, there's, you know, there's negative and positive, you know, energies. Most of the negative and evil, I think, are human qualities, you know, as opposed to, you know, spiritual, you know, qualities. So an answer, you know, to her question, I don't think that, you know, as Tom alluded to, that, you know, in the next world is a world of progression. So even the people that led these what we would call evil lives have seen the light, to use that term, and have helpers on the other side. And those helpers are not interfered with, from what we could gather, by, you know, negative forces. So, I think that, and it's a hard concept for a lot of people to understand, because we want afterlife justice. We want murderers, you know, to face the music, you know. But again, that's the way they were in human form. But in spirit form, they're no longer, evil and murderers. So that's the only way that we can really think of it.
And I should surround this, and we're here, we have no idea, but we have seen evidence, and what we're talking about and the conclusions that we're coming to come from evidence. And for me, the evidence that I see that addresses this is countless times I have observed readings where somebody comes through, a stepfather or a brother or somebody who was abusive and nasty, nasty person comes through so much that the sitter almost gets up and leaves. I don't want to hear from this person because they're evil. And invariably, every time that person is coming through the medium to apologize. So there is a rectifying of that kind of evil when you get to the other side.
Yeah, let me. There's another question here. I'd like to know how our loved ones who have passed spend their time. I know the time is not the same as it is here, but what are they doing? Do they have jobs or assignments? And she added, my husband was smart and charismatic and funny and loving. Does he retain these same characteristics in the spirit world?
That he does. I think so.
And again, as Tom said, I mean, we can't really know, but we're going by channel reports and near-death experiences, and so forth. And it certainly seems like people on the other side do have certain, we call them jobs, it's probably a poor term, but certain missions that they take up. I don't know whether assignment is a good word either, but clearly there are people whose, for instance, whose job it is to perhaps help for young children that pass, and they sit with them and counsel them and so forth. So, and people talk about, I mean, scientists, great scientists that were on Earth, that work to help scientists that are still here, from the other side, musicians that inspire other musicians, so we're very much there, like we were here, with certain abilities that seem to carry over, right?
It would make sense that, and those are some of my earliest readings in studying about the afterlife, just on those areas you spoke about, Bob, with physicians helping others. There have been reports of, I wouldn't, since I don't know much about the medical field, but people crediting unknown sources, really, like, I don't know how I knew to do that, but I did. So I'm kind of envisioning now that on the other side, those souls are busy, the spirits are busy looking for areas where they can be of assistance to others in all fields.
And also for the other question about her husband, keeping the same characteristics and traits. One of the first books ever written about this stuff from Dr. F.W. Myers was entitled Human Personality, The Survival of Personality, after bodily death. So not only does our consciousness survive bodily death, but our personality survives. So somebody, that and that's why we see it in medium readings. How many people, the sitters say, the medium took on the personality of the loved one. So I knew it was them. So yeah, I mean, I would imagine that your husband still is loving and charismatic and and funny on the other side, of course, in a different way. So I believe that the personality is very much a part of what survives, after bodily death.
Yeah, I mean, we know that spirit is there to greet you when you pass over. There will be your loved ones there. So that's something kind of job-like. There's also, I've read not so much, but about, I've seen in readings where they say, well, you know, your new baby that's just come in, well, I was holding that baby before they came into your world. So there's spirit not only helping you when you cross, but helping the newborns before they cross.
Yeah. And or as I mentioned, born, you mean.
Before they're, yeah, cross into the physical world. And, you know, and the testimony of light, this spirit who was in charge of helping somebody with their life review. And then another thing, they said, well, what do they do over there? Again, I'm reminded of a reading that my father came through for. And at the end of the reading, he says, you know, see that jet ski out there? I'm going to go ride on the back of that jet ski all day long, and they'll never know I'm there. So you can even have fun on the other side. It's a continuation of life. It's not all that different other than the vehicle that we are. Our soul is riding in. Right now, our vehicle is this physical form, which is pretty limiting. And when we pass to the other side, our soul still exists, our consciousness still exists, our personality exists, but we're just not hampered with having to walk everywhere. We can zip places.
And I also know that some spirits are having fun being matchmakers on the other side and see what's going on in this physical world and making certain connections for people in the physical.
You know, I mean, following up on what Tom said, you know, that you don't have to walk any place because, you just get transported by thought, right?
Yeah.
So somebody might say, well, you know, if we could just think of going someplace and we're there, then shouldn't it be easy for those in the spirit world to zip to the physical world, just by thought?
Well, yeah.
I mean,
that's what they do, because you get to a medium who can see spirit. They say, we're standing right next to you. So, right. Yeah, they're doing that all the time.
Exactly. And I think what people get confused is that thought is thought. You know, that's how they're communicating with us directly and through a medium. Manifestation is a little bit different. We know that apparitions do exist, but I think it's a lot harder for somebody to cross dimensions and manifest in physical form. That must be really difficult. Yeah. So it does happen, but it's not as easy as we might think it is, right?
And do we think then perhaps to create electronic voice phenomena, EVP, that may be a little easier to manifest a voice using energy waves or whatever? Because I don't know, I feel like I have had more experiences of that than seeing any manifestation.
Well, there is a similarity, and we know it's controversial. You know, some of the scientific community kind of scoffs at some of this stuff, but we've seen a lot of evidence, and not only the voices, but also manifesting their image. You know, so that's another form of, you know, is that easier than a physical manifestation? Perhaps, you know, it sure seems so. If you had a question for us, the number here is 888-627-6008. So here's a question. Does everyone go to the afterlife? You know, I mean, I can see why the question is asked, because near-death experiences tell us that they have a choice whether to come back, right? In reincarnation, it appears that it's also a choice whether they want to come back in another. So what about the other way? Is there any choice whether you continue on to the afterlife or you just say, no, that's, you know, I mean.
Well, there is. In fact, I read a book, the woman who inspired the TV show Ghost Whisperer wrote a book, and she's the only account of this. And I've asked many mediums about it, and they're all, I don't know, but She, in her book, claims that she deals exclusively with spirit that is stuck here, that kind of to what you were saying, they didn't want to go over, so they just stayed in the in their favorite room and walked around all night, and everybody's going, oh, there they are. So there is a thought or a hypothesis for that. And I said, this woman who wrote a book and inspired a TV show claims that that's all she does is go and help people get across. So,
right. And I think, but one of the point there is also that even the person that, if you let's make the assumption that they are, they don't want to move on, but they are in the afterlife, you know, they just have attachment, you know, so, you know, consciousness is energy and energy survives. So it, I would say that, yeah, everybody goes to the afterlife. I mean, how they handle it is, you know, maybe different. So any conscious entity, you know, goes.
And also what we've gotten from the near-death experience stories, once you see the other side, you don't want to stay here because it's so much more beautiful.
Right. Well, here's another thought. So, I mean, the way science is going, it's not far-fetched, not in our lifetime, but somewhere in the future, that eventually science is going to figure out a way that nobody dies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're going to cure, be able to cure all diseases, you know, revitalize the system, you know. So let's say that happens. Then the afterlife, we call it the afterlife, but this next realm sort of becomes like a gated community. You know, everybody that's there is there. You know, I mean, there may be other levels where they continue on, but there's no, there are no newcomers coming in.
Wow.
Nobody, you know, I mean, plus the fact, if that ever happens, science would also have to figure out a way that we could coexist on this planet, you know, with if you just keep adding millions and millions and millions of people, you know, we're going to explode. So you can't just figure that out without figuring out the rest. I don't know how they're going
to islands in the ocean would have to be created, or condos undersea.
Well, I've had a concept that I had for a sci-fi book or movie or something like that, where you're a famous entertainer or something like that. You know, I pick Elvis, right? Yeah. And we're in the future where if your knee's bad, they put a plastic knee in. Your heart's bad, they put a plastic heart. And then as time goes by, all of a sudden you've replaced all the physical pieces and you are basically a robot, but your consciousness is still in that body. And then if you decide, I don't want to live like this, how do you get out of it?
Ooh.
You know, can you escape something like that?
Wow, you look around for big smashers.
And feel free, anybody wants to write that. I'm never going to write that, so go ahead. you have carte blanche.
Well, you know, a lot of the things that we're talking about now, especially if we were talking about it when we were kids, I mean, that would sound totally like science fiction, right?
Yeah.
And now not so much. Like, okay.
Right. This question is pretty much what we had already discussed, but I'm curious and in fact concerned about spirits that have not crossed over to the other side but remain attached to a certain place or person or even an object. Some are not even aware that they have died. Others believe that they aren't worthy of going to the light. My questions are they destined to remain in this limbo forever? And will anyone from the light come to help them crossover, or is it up to us on Earth to find and help them?
I think that goes back to some of the helpers on the other side. There's some of them might have that job of seeking out these sort of lost individuals or stuck.
Right.
Or you find the lady who wrote that book that I was talking about. That's her job, is to say, hey, you can go now. Somebody along the way can say, you can go now.
Yeah.
Well, there's a gray area here, because there are sightings, hauntings, if you will, of spirit that looks like they're still here and stuck like in a room walking back and forth or something, that aren't there at all. They're not the spirit. They're just, it's an imprint, right, of a memory or imprint of an energy. And so they're not really there. But I do think that there are instances of people who cross and don't know that they've crossed or don't want to cross for whatever reasons. And they are in limbo for a while, but I don't think it's a permanent thing.
Right. I agree. So this, you know, being stuck forever in limbo or purgatory or whatever you choose to, you know, we don't believe that that's the case, you know.
No.
There's constant evolution, you know, of consciousness. But like Tom said, I mean, some people may be among others of like mind for a considerable amount of time as we know it, because they take longer to learn. Some of us are slower learners than others, right? Yeah. They are here, and I'm sure they are there. This is something that we've also discussed on the show before, but do discarnate spirits ever know about, you know, about future events? Would this suggest that our conscious awareness has fewer limitations or is less filtered in spirit than in flesh? I don't know whether or not they actually have the capability of seeing future events, but the evidence would say otherwise. Yeah, because we see so many times where they give people in spirit do give warnings to people here, and that surely says that they're seeing something that we're not seeing. So
right.
I think they see a bigger picture from their perspective. So they also know that we have free will here, just as they have free will there. So it may not turn out the way that they envision it. But yeah, I mean, we constantly, you know, hear all of these stories where people say that they heard a voice in their head that, for instance, you know, turn left when they always turn right, or don't go to work today. Of course, all these things are intertwined. So when you get that message, the question is that really coming from somebody in spirit? Or is this a telepathic connectivity, you know, that we all have, where we're picking up, like with the Global Consciousness Project, and when people are focusing on, you know, same thing, and we're communicating, you know, by thought. So some of these things are so difficult to determine, because we never really know if it's spirit involvement or just telepathic communication, you know, or people precognition, you know, maybe it's spirits not evolved, you know, in it, but we're getting some sort of a precognitive vision of something that's going to happen, you know, directly. So,
And what Melissa mentioned earlier about the other side is there is no time. So when you say, can spirits see the future? There is no future for them, because everything is happening at the same time. A concept that I don't think any human is really going to grasp fully while they're here, and which brings me back to a series of writings called Seth Speaks, with this channeled spirit is explaining things. And at one point, Seth says, well, you know, I could explain to you exactly what's going on, but your human mind couldn't possibly understand it or grasp it. So I think there's a lot in the universe that we cannot grasp, even if it was spelled out to us in some way.
Right.
I still think back to what I feel Tom's father on the other side orchestrated for our daughter, with having her meet her then future husband, who she didn't even know at the time, But he had come back before passing while he was in the hospital after having a heart attack on the operating table and then being revived, and unfortunately never did make it home from the hospital. But in that interim, he told Tom's mom, "I have an important message, you know, for Tom and Melissa's daughter." And she wanted to make sure we got that message. And the message was, don't give up. And when our daughter heard that message, she was very confused about it because she was going for her doctorate at the time and her program was going well and everything along those lines, which is what she interpreted it to be, don't give up, turned out more to be in her love life, and which only I, of the family members, knew that she was, you know, having difficulty finding just the right person. And lo and behold, who comes along but somebody that his dad actually names during a reading, not even with any of, you know, Tom's side of the family. I know that sounds like a very convoluted story for anyone without all the details like that, but it's just a knowing that I have now that that's what happened. And there were many more steps that followed. So I do think that they can orchestrate things from the other side. Or even when we hear that, you know, somebody was trying hard to conceive, have a baby, and as soon as the loved one was gone that knew of that wish, this, you know, couple would suddenly find out, we are going to have a baby. So I think things can be manipulated from the other side. I don't know if manipulated sounds like a nice word.
Influenced.
That's a good one.
Yeah, because our daughter was pretty much off the market. And she, in fact, she had a poster in her room in her apartment that said a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. And she was determined not to be married. She wanted to adopt kids, but she didn't want to get married. She didn't want to do any of that. And then lo and behold, don't give up. And here he comes. So it was joyful for all of us.
Yeah. You know what I meant to tell you guys at the beginning? It's off topic, but I figured out why I keep, experiencing all these hurricanes, you know, it's because besides
Florida
being born under a dark cloud, you've heard that expression.
Oh, but of course.
I realize what it is that I'm practicing for the afterlife because very soon I won't have any material possessions. And that's exactly what happens. You know, you say you can't take it with you, right?
Yes.
I mean, so I'll be in good shape because I won't miss anything.
That's right.
Well, maybe you didn't need to go get a new car, Bob. You know, just a bicycle or a scooter or something.
Yeah, I know.
Skateboard.
I already got a new car.
another hurricane's on its way. You just guaranteed it.
Somebody had a question about ego in mediums, you know, whether or not if a medium gets popular and gets an inflated ego, whether that affects, you know, the spirit communication. I know that's something we've talked about before. I think we've all noticed some mediums that seem to have fallen into that trap. Because bear in mind that the next world is, there is no ego.
Right.
So if somebody has an inflated ego here, it would seem logical that the people in the spirit world that have no ego would not want to cooperate, you know, so their abilities wane.
Well, I heard a story recently about someone we all know, and I'm not going to mention the name of this individual, but their ego is enormous, and I do not think their abilities are very strong anymore or accurate, and on the flip side, some of our very beloved mediums who choose not to do readings any longer because they're so sought out and it must be so exhausting that instead they're spreading their talents by offering more of what they can teach you how to live your life. So I've seen the flip side of why talented mediums may no longer be doing private readings. Some whose heads have gotten way too big cannot, and those who choose to spread their knowledge in a more generous way can do so.
We also can't discount, which seems to be a fact, that the practicing mediumship takes a physical toll. I mean, there have been so many mediums that develop serious physical ailments, and that's another reason why they just feel that they can't continue to do that work. And I guess that makes sense, because we know in readings, the mediums say, I have a tremendous tightness in my chest. Did your dad die from a heart attack? And they're always feeling the way that somebody died. And then also that takes an emotional toll, because they're feeling the sadness and all that other stuff. So it's hard work to keep doing consistently over decades, a few years. So that may be another reason why, mediums, kind of pull back.
And I'm glad we discussed this, because I would not want someone to think that just because a particular medium is having to step back, it doesn't have anything to do with lack of ability or, just how they're they're being, what would you say, on the rewards of their, I don't know, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, I always thought that would be an interesting study, to determine whether it's different from the general population. Do mediums have a higher rate of illness?
Or burnout, or
even emotional stress, than people of similar age, in other, occupations, because it sure does seem like, from what we've experienced, I mean, I know a lot of the mediums seem to have these ailments that a lot of their contemporaries don't. And also, there's a lot of things with mediums. Mediums also, and we've talked about this, I'd say that the overwhelming majority of evidential mediums have suffered physical trauma or emotional trauma when they were children. May be a trigger, to their abilities. So there's a lot more to research, with mediums than just whether or not they can communicate with the dead.
And I know this has come up when, certainly we have conversations with so many of the mediums that have been certified through this foundation. And I know some have expressed that's why they no longer can volunteer for some of the conferences or the retreats that we do, because it's right. Just so taxing for them, but their heart is still in it.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe when we retire, that's what we can do, is we'll just do research, research on me. forget everything else.
What's that word, retire, mean?
Yeah. I don't know.
I've heard of it.
It's like, you're not technically retired. You're still working, right? Tom and I are somewhat retired, even though Tom's occupation now is just a musician.
Yeah.
and then people ask me what I do. I don't even know what to say. But let's see what else, came in. Well, we've discussed this so many times, but how do you describe the difference between the reception of psychic information versus, you know, spirit of communication. It's not, it certainly seems like it's not the same. You know, the mediums tell us that it has a different feel to it, so they know. And a lot of people don't understand the question, you know, but there's a difference, but it seems to be a different skill set in being able to talk with somebody that's no longer in the physical world than reading somebody's mind that's still alive.
You know? And usually the medium should be able, not usually, always attribute it to someone. Well, how do you know this? Or where are you getting this information from? And they can name a source of even though they might not recognize who exactly the spirit is, they can tell that it's coming from an entity that's no longer in the physical, right, versus out of their own feelings towards the sitter.
Yeah, when you're doing a psychic reading, you're looking at the aura that's around a sitter, whereas if you're doing a mediumistic reading, it, like you say, it comes in from another way. That there's one of our prime mediums who says, well, they're showing me pictures. You know, it's like a little movie going on the left side of my brain. There's a movie going on. I know it's coming from spirit. So they seem to know where, if it's coming from psychically or mediumistically.
Yeah. Certainly the better mediums can, you know, I've had inexperienced mediums tell me that, you know, there is no difference between, you know, psychic and discarnate, because all psychic information comes from spirit guides. So I don't really buy into that at all. But yeah, you see, everything is all connected, because we talk about the difference, but mental mediumship is telepathic communication. It's psychic communication, right? Just one person doesn't have a body, but it's still mind to mind. So, you know, I realize when I say to people, we're not interested from our evaluation process in telepathic or psychic information, sometimes it's very difficult to parse the two. So it's, but the reason that we say that is because if you tell me that I am going to get a new job, or if you tell me that I am going to take a vacation, I mean, how does that prove that there is an after, that there's life after that? You know, so we're only interested in information that could not be gained from any means, you know, other than communicating with a discarnate entity. So,
and I do think psychics, true psychics, have an amazing ability, and it's, you know, very useful for many people struggling with what path to take in life. It could help guide them. I think some might rely on them too heavily and don't make a move or a decision without contacting their favorite psychic. But I think that's an amazing ability. But it, like you said, Bob, it's, you know, not what we're seeking.
Yeah. Do you think that those in spirit keep track of our lives in the physical world? And we've talked about that. And yeah, I mean, they're not with us 24 hours a day, but I think they do keep track of what's going on. I mean, I use the example that I've told before, but after Fran passed, I was in the kitchen. When I came back to the house, I was washing dishes, and, you know, we had remodeled, the kitchen, and, you know, Fran was, you know, worked on the design and all that stuff. And I used to complain to Fran that I hated the sinks because they were poorly designed. You know, they just weren't deep enough, and I would get soaked every time I washed the dishes. So here I am alone. I'm talking to her out loud, as I was doing a lot. And I said, Fran, I don't give a shit what you say. This sink is poorly designed, you know, and I'm look at me, I'm totally drenched. And then the next morning, I get an email from Janet Mayer, who people would know as one of our certified mediums, and she said, "Bob, I Fran came to me last night, and she said that I must contact you and just mention kitchen sink." I said, so that's proof to me that they are keeping track of our, I mean,
Oh yeah, countless readings that I've observed where they say, "Oh, and the wedding, I was at the wedding," or "There's going to be a wedding, I'm going to be there." There's that. So yeah, there's another area where people are more skeptical is orbs that you see in pictures. These orbs that have no other explanation, and some people think that they're spirit. And I have had we have a collection of pictures that we've taken that have orbs in them, and most of them are around music and dancing. It was an orb at my daughter's wedding when on the dance floor. There was an orb on my hand when I was playing at CBGB in New York. So that spirit comes and goes. Like we said before, they can go anywhere, anytime, as quickly as they want and have fun. So they're out having fun, and then they come back every once in a while and say, "Hey, what are you guys up to?" And they'll stop by.
You know, one of my favorite orb pictures, which I should try to find and reproduce to share. I'd been out west with my family. Tom wasn't able to go at the time, but we were on the lands where my dad had grown up, and it was a lot of Native American activity. And there was a large, I would have called it a buffalo, I think bison is
Bison, yeah.
the correct term. And it was a bison, a very large bison in the distance, and my dad had taken a photo of it. And when it was developed, there was a very large orb right alongside the bison, as if it were, an old Native American walking alongside the bison, and it just felt very powerful.
We It's a question that we've gotten a lot in the past, but how come mediums never communicate descriptions of the afterlife in readings, what the afterlife is like? Not the first time we've seen that question. The only way that I can describe it is that the mediums are getting information, and it's really hard for them to be able to take that information, make sense out of it, and then put it into words that we can understand. And usually they're short things, pieces of evidence, because the main purpose of somebody on the other side is to let us know that they still exist. So they're not going to do that with a description that we can't verify. They're going to do it with specific pieces of information that only we would know. But besides that, it's hard enough to do that, let alone a narrative of what they're, seeing in the afterlife. But that has happened, in the past. There have been books written that have been channeled, from spirit, and you've both read some of them, and it gives very detailed information about what the afterlife is like. So it doesn't mean it's not possible, but you don't see too many channelers, true channelers today, right? You don't come across them too much.
Right.
Do you recall?
Well,
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom.
I'm just going to say that when you're talking about, okay, we're living this life and then we go to the afterlife, and goes, "Well, what's the difference?" The difference is we have changed. The surroundings are the same. The afterlife is here. The only difference is that without these poorly, these human eyes and ears, we see better. It's more beautiful. The colors are more vivid, but it's the same color. It's the same place. I mean, you're seeing trees, you're seeing people, you're seeing this. It's just that you're in a different form. You're not in a different place. You're in a different form. So what's the afterlife like? Well, this is the afterlife. It's just we're not in the form to really fully appreciate it yet.
Maybe all the haze and the filters are lifted. One point I want to make before our time is up is just to say that in all of the readings, and you can correct me, Bob, because I'm sure you've been a party to many more readings than Tom and I have, not once have I ever heard a medium bring through any information regarding politics or religion. And I think those just are not issues that have any importance on the afterlife. So I always find that interesting when all these wars are happening and upset over things, that think about the bigger picture.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, there's no incentive on the other side for those kind of things. I mean, there's no ego, there's no greed, there's no material possessions, there's no quest for power. So, you know, it's a totally different thing. I tell a lot of people now that, you know, that my life is an open book. You know, they ask me anything that you want. I mean, I have nothing to hide. Not that I've lived the life of a saint, anything but.
Come up with something, right?
There's nothing that I feel I need to hide. So, you know, so it's trying to practice being somebody without an ego. And that's practicing for the afterlife. You know, so the more that we're able to do that here now, I think the easier our transition will be when we get to the other side.
Yeah,
good
I
point.
Agree with that.
I like that.
All right, so now I think we've just about reached the end of our time. Let me read our global peace prayer from our former president of the foundation, now deceased Claude Swanson. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Bye.